From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of July, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Bossy. He is with Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. Mike Zuzulo is away from the office this afternoon. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible. If you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll hear all of our Commodity Week program recorded yesterday afternoon with our panelists Kurt Kimmel, Dave Chatterton, and Greg Johnson. If not, well, you can hear it up online right now at willag.org, willag.org, and many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend. Old crop corn finished a quarter higher today. New crop December and March both unchanged, 487.5 and 503 respectively. September beans up 9.25 at 1240.25. November 1253.5, 9.75 higher for the day. Wheat futures in the December down 18.25 at 695.5, a hook down there in the charts. December at 761.5 for the Kansas City, that down 14.25. Dan Bossy now joins us. He's with Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. It's been a while since we've spoken. Dan, thanks for being with me today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Always good to talk about the markets. There's so much going on, Tommy.
This market is always interesting. This one is kind of a fun one either to chase or follow or try to be ahead of, which is what you, I know, try to do. What have you been thinking about the marketplace?
Yeah, we started to grow these little nubbings in the top of our heads called horns. I haven't had any for about 3 years. they're still got their velvet on them, but I'm becoming more and more confident in them in such that as we look at things like the European drought, which I was over there a few weeks ago in France and Italy, and it is bad. It is the Black Sea in terms of heightened military action against grain, both in terms of port infrastructure and vessels. And then it looks like the United States and China are still cozying up to themselves. Even after we raised tariffs on them another 2% overnight, they're still talking at a very high level and looking forward to a meeting in the 24th of September. Then if you throw in the mixture, maybe not the best July weather, not what we were expecting, you kind of end up with a market that probably will head higher in time and a super El Nino out there. Not sure what that means, but we'll watch it very carefully as we get into the autumn.
What does this week's trade tell you about the marketplace? Anything in particular?
Well, we scored new highs in the soybean market, new contract highs relative to November beans. We did the same in wheat. It's highly unusual at this time of year. And when I go back and look at the times that we've scored new July highs, it usually means that that trend persists at least into the first quarter of next year. So we think we have some bullishness, if you will, that will last. Breaks will be well supported. I need to get beyond the August crop report to get finality to acreage numbers. There's a little concern looking at some of the RMA data that maybe we could find a few extra acres, both on corn and beans. But that being said, it still comes down to a yield question. But the on-again, off-again war within the Middle East is really causing fertilizer difficulties. Brazil has not laid down the supply that they need to for the upcoming crop, and I think they're running out of time to get that done. So globally, we've got a world that the world wheat production of the major exporters down about 50 million metric tons. It's a record, just a reverse of last year. And then corn, because of the EU and maybe the United States, we're also coming down there. But soybeans in China has lifted that market. And so, you know, Todd, I'm thinking about a demand-led market, but I first need to understand the size of the U.S. crop before I can really strap and load and go forward in a big way and take out new highs again in corn.
Oh, I see. So I was going to ask you whether this was demand-led and where from, but really you're thinking there's demand enough there to make this thing move higher.
Yeah, I think it's a demand-led market, and I only say that because I believe the EU will become the world's largest corn importer and take significant amounts of U.S. corn as they drop their, let's say, adversity towards GM corn, though it's not all countries, back in 2022. So as we stand back from it, I think I've got the EU taking 27 to 29 million metric tons of global corn. That'll put them ahead of Mexico. That means that both of those countries will take a billion bushels each from the world market. And that, along with a 43% expansion in U.S. biofuel consumption for green diesel, 7 million metric tons, and again, that fall in world wheat exporter supplies, starts to get the engine started. And I don't look for the U.S. to be a significant wheat exporter unless this Black Sea attacks on grain continue. But in saying that, I do think corn and soybeans will be along the way. And I'm not including much in terms of U.S. corn to China, only 5 million metric tons. But nonetheless, it's enough that it twists and turns and gives us strong enough demand that we're going to use another 16 billion bushels. And I've got U.S. corn end stocks about 1.4 billion bushels.
Do you think soybeans will give up their lead in the marketplace? They still are at today. They're still higher, but everything else turned neutral to lower for just the day anyway. And that corn might actually take that position, be the one that's leading things higher?
I do believe that it has been soybeans and soybean oil and crush margins that are, you know, off their highs, but still at a very fancy $3.40 a bushel. And I really need to finish up where I was before because, you know, because we had this problem of 11 million metric tons of wheat, nearly 300 million bushels, lowest U.S. wheat crop looking back to the early 70s, I need farmers to plant more wheat. So it all starts with planting more wheat in the market, buying those acres. You see Kansas City July futures getting up near $8 a bushel. Not sure whether that'll do it or not, but that's one of the functions. And then as I buy more wheat, I need more corn and bean acres next year. Soybeans just for the expansion in RVO and continuance of China buying 25 million metric tons or 920 million bushels. And then if I do that, I don't have enough acres for corn because we are putting additionality in terms of the CRP program. We're getting closer and closer to that 27 million acre ceiling. So adding it all together, the market's not only looking this year, but it's trying to understand what price will buy the acres next year, particularly with fertilizer and chemicals and everything else still costing a lot of money for the farmer.
Given all of that, you've talked about a lot about the 27 harvest and acreage. What does that really mean for the harvest that has to come this fall and what producers should be thinking as it's related to, oh my gosh, it looks like we're going to need the acres. We're probably going to need the corn and the soybeans. But they've been dealing with much lower prices.
They have. And I think that June break just, you know, solidified the bearishness that was prevailing across the central U.S. And it got everybody turning bearish. And I first admit that when China came and did the additionality and the $17 billion on a prorated basis, it kind of turned our head, got us a little bullish, but we really didn't bite that until we got to the end of the month and got past the June seedings and stocks report. That being said, I do think farmers need to change their marketing programs or thought process to some degree. And it's you know, before in the last 3 years, we've been managing downside risk and using rallies for sales. And I think that was a correct mentality. Now I'm thinking about how do we open up our upside potential so that we can maximize revenue in a year like this. And so, you know, call options, the sale of puts, the buy of calls or futures, these are the kind of tools that you can use. Not sure I'd be chasing the market right here, but if we do get a break, like after the August crop report or maybe before harvest, that would provide that opportunity. But I do think farmers need to leave their upside open. Our work would show us that there's a chance of getting up to $6 of corn, if you will, sometime later this year, early next year. Our average cash price for the farm gate is $5.95 a bushel relative to that stocks to use ratio at 1.4 billion. So there is upside in the market, and I'm not thinking that corn futures December can really drop too far below 460 or 470 going forward. So that's what I think the farmers need to be thinking about in this special year where maybe for the next 12 or 18 months we can see markets at least start to move higher and provide longer term sales opportunities thereafter.
Hey, thank you much, Dan. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That's Dan Bossie. He is with Ag Resource Company. Let's turn our attention now to the global growing regions and the weather across the planet. We're joined by Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. It's been nearly a month since we talked, just because Fridays lined up in the way they did for July 4, and I was traveling the last couple of them and wasn't able to get hold of you because of what I was up to. So I'm really kind of interested in what you think about looking back first at those last 3 weeks or so and what really has taken place and interest you across the growing regions, particularly the Corn Belt here in the United States.
Yeah, I think the biggest interest is going to be in the Western Corn Belt, honestly, because during that time frame, this whole last month, we have seen some pretty rapid drying across parts of South Dakota, Western Iowa, you know, North Dakota, even sections of Minnesota. We had the huge wildfires, of course, that were up in the, you know, that's part of Ontario, just north of Minnesota. A lot of that smoke went east, keeping things a bit cooler farther to the east, but it got very, very hot in the Western Corn Belt. And we got a lot of places there that have been dry, and they're now over that kind of critical threshold of 140 stress degree days accumulated on the season. So I am anticipating that given the dry forecast in the West, plus the heat that's coming back on this week, I mean, you see the temperatures forecast for parts of the Western Corn Belt, like 105 to 108 degrees. It's going to be smoking hot, very, very dry, and that's going to continue to put a lot of stress on the crop there. Now, here in Illinois, we've had this beautiful week, right? I mean, have you slept with the windows open, Todd, this week?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a nice cool down. We have some scattered showers in the area today. And overall, this has been a kind of a week where we've taken some of the stress off. But Todd, it comes back to something we talked about earlier in the season. It seemed as though we're going to take that Mississippi River and it's going to divide things up this year. And we've certainly seen the Western Corn Belt, especially the far Western Corn Belt, take more punishment from the atmosphere than the Eastern Corn Belt has. But as you know, we talked about just before we went on air here, you know, there's some concern going forward of heat returning, which we're going to see this week into next week, and we're going to have some humidity with it, which means there will be pop-up thunderstorms. They're just not equitably distributing their rainfall. And the question is going to be how long that heat's going to last.
Well, I do have a question about some of the comments that you made. Mm-hmm. If we divide this east and west along the Mississippi River, Iowa, at least eastern Iowa, yeah, to the best of my knowledge, and I think almost all of Iowa is in unbelievable shape at this time.
They are. Yeah. We need to include Iowa. We'll just say, for this year, you're on the better side of the Mississippi. No, it's really good across Iowa. It's not until you almost get to Sioux Falls and then start heading west. Like last week, I drove from Sioux Falls to Pier, and Todd, the corn was standing straight up because it was 100 degrees outside. I got into Pier that night at about 10 o'clock in the evening. It was still 93 degrees. I got up early to do some work in the morning, but I could look at my hotel room. And normally overnight, what do the corn leaves do? They relax, they open. Nope, still standing straight up when I got up the next morning. So we've really hit on that crop with both dryness. We've, of course, put on their major heat in the daytime, but we kept the overnight lows quite warm as well. But here's what the killer is, Todd. The crop looks green. So when you stare at it from like satellite or just driving down the road, you're like, well, it's a green crop. And the satellite NDVI data looks high for South Dakota. Yet I just talked to two growers from there yesterday, and they're like, look, I know it looks okay, but it is not. We've taken too much heat during pollination, and this is going to be a problem.
Have they made some counts? Can they really tell? Are the ears far enough along? I suspect not yet to know.
No, they're not.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we'll have to wait and see. And the next 2 weeks are going to make a big difference. What do you see for them over that 2 week period? I know you've told us it's hot. Any rainfall at all?
Well, the hope is that you're going to get some ridge riding storms to go through that area. But every day when you wake up, you're going to get a different story from the models. And as I've told you before, Todd, like it's always, it bothers me to no end, but it's how it works that summer is our least predictable time of year, right? There's no flow in the atmosphere. We're just waiting to see where the very subtle boundaries that kick off thunderstorms are going to be. And we can't even predict those more than 12 to 24 hours in advance. And we're just waiting to see how things, you know, go as the season goes on. And if you look at most of the models, they're on the drier side of average for the next couple of weeks. And they bring in serious heat starting this weekend from the west toward the east. We will likely get more break from the heat the farther the east you go while the west maintains it. But the big question for August is, are we going to get rain on these beans? And are we going to back off the temperatures? And there's a sliver of hope that we could get better rains and less volatile temperatures based on some of the things shifting around, which I do believe, Todd, are kind of anchored to our continually and rapidly developing El Nino, which is going to become a bigger factor the farther into August and then beyond we go.
How confident might you be?
None, like zero confidence. I mean, Todd, here's the problem. Like when you have such weak flow out of the West, there's no like really strong signal to tell you about the timing of anything or how moisture can recover. And so you're waiting daily just to see if anything shifted. I would love nothing more than for just some massive hurricane to show up or a big jump in the trade winds or just something to happen maybe over Russia or Alaska just to kick this flow in the butt. But it is so slow that determining when and where things are going to take shape is just, it's just not there. So any meteorologist, you know, that comes out and says they've got, you know, the August forecast nailed down, they are lying through their teeth, man. We cannot predict flow patterns like this. It's very, very hard.
Tell me about the El Nino just a bit and why sometimes it's called the Super El Nino at this yeah. point.
Well, it's the fastest this year, 2026, across the Equator Pacific. It's the fastest we've ever watched the atmosphere and ocean change over to El Nino state. Specifically in the ocean, we now have the temperatures in the middle of the equatorial Pacific at nearly 2.5 degrees Celsius above normal. Now, remember El Nino's namesake, right? It's El Nino, the little boy, is referencing Jesus. And there's a reason for that, because El Nino's peak around Christmas. We are Todd, we are 6 months from Christmas Eve right now. Is that right?
Yes, it is today.
Okay,
yep.
So there's a long time for this El Nino to continue to grow, and it has already gotten up into what we would call the strong El Nino territory. If it warms just another half a degree, which it will do easily, it will be the new historic strongest El Nino that we've ever observed. And it's still got 6 more months to continue to ripen and develop, which is going to make it a big issue come fall. And I think the biggest thing we're going to talk about, Todd, is that El Nino tilts the odds in favor of wetter fall conditions across the Corn Belt, meaning we tighten up those fall harvest windows and tighten up the field work windows. But Todd, again, my crystal ball has cataracts, man, and I'm basing a lot of this off of what I see with El Nino. But this El Nino is kind of in its own special category.
Oh boy, I hurt at the moment for the guys out west if they have just a bad corn crop and then they have to go in and mud it out. That would be terrible. So
that's why I don't disclose my location anytime. I don't want anybody to know where I am. As I, you know, it could be pretty terrible news, Todd. And you know, one other thing to think about. I would like to know what disease pressure looks like across the state of Illinois too, because we had a very, very wet June and those leaf wetness hours are high. So there could be another factor lingering. And Todd, have you heard every morning, like I wake up and the sun rises and guess what I hear? I hear those crop dusters out flying early. I think they're going to be working overtime at the end of this month.
Well, I can give you an update on what things look like. One moment, let me pull up the old Crop Protection Network Crop Lookout interactive map from the plant pathologist across the Midwest. And let's start with tar spot. And the answer is, hasn't changed in the last week.
It hasn't, but I tell you, same as it was.
Southern rust. Off. You know what? Southern rust, well, it showed up last week in 3 counties in Iowa, but that's it. So,
yeah.
And it is on the southern border of Illinois. Let me pull that back up. And the answer is, yeah, it's down on the Indiana-Illinois border with Kentucky as well. So,
yeah. But I could argue, Todd, we're about 3 weeks delayed in certain things this year. And so I'm wondering if these next 3 weeks are going to be, we're going to see a lot of changes in those maps. So we'll see.
We'll see. Hey, thanks much. We'll talk to you soon enough.
Yep, you bet.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions in Agrible. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at WILL, ag.org.